Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, ready to blast off on our Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show on the final day of February. It's February 28th, 2019. Happy birthday to all you leap year babies, including my nephew, David. So, you know, a leap year baby, they get every 4 years, so they're really a lot younger, right?
Right.
I mean, so put it all together and a birthday every 4 years, figure it out. I mean, they're young people. Anyway, Bob Deal, you do a great job producing and engineering on the other side of the glass, and we always expect a great show from you in the control room, and you always deliver the goods. That's the most important thing. Buckmaster heard Monday through Friday during the noon hour. You're listening to 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, and of course, kvoi.com. We have the podcasts available for you. They're at buckmastershow.com. Our live line number, 790-2040. Any questions for Randy Dorman? Randy would be happy to take those questions.
Absolutely.
She'll be a very good sport about it. Randy, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on today.
It's our pleasure. Developer and downtown advocate Randy Dorman, one of three Democrats who have launched campaigns to replace Tucson's mayor, Jonathan Rothschild, who ends his second four-year term this year. Ms. Dorman joins Ward 1 City Council member Rahina Romero and former state lawmaker Steve Farley in the August primary. Ad agency owner Ed Ackerley is running as an independent. Originally from the New York City area, Randy Dorman worked in advertising with international brands such as Charmin, Crest, and Old Spice for 15 years before moving to downtown Tucson in the December of 2001 with her husband, Rob Paulus. Mr. Paulus, an architect and developer, together they formed R Plus R Develop, a local real estate development company. Randy Dorman has served as the president of the Museum of Contemporary Art in Tucson, and she held that title for more than 5 years, and she currently serves as the chairwoman of the Downtown Tucson Partnership. Randy, thanks for being with us.
Thanks. What a great introduction. I think I can leave now.
There you go. Covered all the bases. The obvious first question, why run for mayor?
Sure. Well, like you said, I've been in Tucson for almost 20 years, and I really see the potential that this town has, but I get frustrated that we never seem to reach it. Mm-hmm. We have natural beauty. We have amazing people. We have an incredible culture. We have all the makings of a great city, but we seem to aim low. We seem to settle for the status quo, and I think we can't do that anymore. I think we need to create a vision for what's possible here and work to make that vision happen. We want to create a place where our kids can thrive and their kids can thrive, and that's what I plan to do.
You know, as I reflect on my time here in Tucson, the first time in the 60s, this was very much a hippy-dippy town,
mm-hmm.
and folks didn't... Well, Bob Dio here is a native of Tucson. I think he understands what I'm talking about. It was kind of like the Birkenstock set controlled the city council in that period of time, the 60s, right? You know. And then when I came back in the 80s, late 80s, came back in 88, we were trying to, you know, get with it. We had IBM and other things, and we were at a kind of a crossroads. I think there's still some of that, Randy Dorman, here in town, a conflict between those that want this area to kind of stay the same, kind of the old Pueblo,
sure,
laid back, you know, not grow. And there's this kind of this new wave, relatively new wave, that sees the potential for bigger and better things.
Yeah.
Have I kind of summarized?
I think that's a great observation. And what's wonderful is that there's really room for both. Because when I moved here and when I was dating my husband and we would go on Congress Street in 2001, there was nothing going on except like Hotel Congress. You know, the Fox had not been redeveloped yet. Rio Nuevo was not doing anything yet. And that was really an area in decline, and it was a drain on the economy and on the region. And so in the revitalization of downtown, we've been able to make great strides. So we have to be a community that's on the upswing. That doesn't mean that we can't also preserve the laid-back nature. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And part of the advantage of having a really thriving downtown is that that's where a lot of activity can happen and density can happen, so that the other parts of town, if they don't want that, it doesn't have to be there anymore. We don't have to cut into the desert. And so we really can have a balance of both the laid back nature that's traditional in Tucson, as well as creating a thriving economy so that we can actually do the things that we need to do to be a successful community.
Randy Dorman is with us on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. If you would like to join our conversation, 790-2040. From a policy point of view, what do you see, what would be your strong strengths? Are you a coalition builder?
Well, everything that I've done since I've been here, from real estate development, downtown, museums, lots of volunteering, it's always about collaboration. And one of the beautiful things about being a mayor here is that her biggest responsibility would be to be the collaborator and convener and really champion working, getting people to work together. I've done a lot of different things in a lot of different areas, so I'm lucky that I have friendships and connections that way. So certainly you have to do a lot of collaborating.
How about policy from the downtown point of view? I know that you've worked in the area of trying to find a place for our people who are displaced, our homeless people.
Sure. And that actually started with work that I did in New York with the Legal Action Center for the Homeless, which then became the Urban Justice Center. And through that experience, I really learned people who are facing homelessness, it's so complex. And very, very, very few people choose to be homeless. It's really about circumstance, addiction, mental illness. And there's what we did at the partnership when the park outside of the library had become a homeless encampment, basically. And it wasn't healthy for the people living there, and it wasn't healthy for downtown. But we didn't, we wanted to make sure that we had a compassion first policy. So our policy was compassion first, enforcement second. We partnered with an incredible group here called Old Pueblo Community Services, and they have a housing first model, which it's been so successful. If you put people in homes first and surround them with services, mm-hmm. they can really thrive, as opposed to having them jump through hoops to be eligible for housing. So we literally sat in the park, our Clean and Safe crew and Old Pueblo Community Services, and in 3 months, we found 85 people permanent or temporary housing, and were really able to improve their lives dramatically. So I'm super proud of that program from the Downtown Tucson Partnership.
How about some of the long-term projects? What would you do with our public transit system?
That's a big part of my...
Would you completely overhaul it, or what would you do with it?
Well, public transportation is important for so many reasons. I mean, besides just moving people around, especially people who may not have the means to have a car, it's also environmentally one of the best things that you can do. And the modern streetcar that we have is only 4 miles long, mm-hmm. but within that 4 mile stretch, we've had over $1 billion of public and private investment. So it's been phenomenal. The way that that was funded was primarily through federal funds. Mm-hmm. So we need to have a streetcar expansion plan ready so that when federal infrastructure funds become available again, which they very likely will in the next 2 to 6 years, if you mm-hmm. you know, if you listen to the rumblings, mm-hmm. we need to be shovel ready so that we're first in line when those funds become available. And we need to pair that with better bus lines and rapid bus lines so that people can really use our system to get around town and perhaps not need a car, or maybe a family would then only need one car.
Or expansion to the airport.
For the modern streetcar should definitely expand to the airport.
We're going to take our break right here, Randy Dorman. We will speak with you after our break. But first, I want to tell our listeners about my favorite bakery in town. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's up at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. And the good news is, in a couple of weeks, Randy, they'll be doing a full breakfast at Mona's.
Oh, yum.
So they're putting in all the proper equipment to make that happen. So go to monasdanishbakery.com. You can also go, and I hope you will, to my website, buckmastershow.com. There's a link not only to Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, but a link to all of our great partners that make what I do here and have done the last over 8 years possible. So check it out, buckmastershow.com, monasdanishbakery.com as well. Coming soon, breakfast at Mona's. We'll be right back with Randy Dorman.
Thank you.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare. by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice. We're trusted local news and talk. The program is named, it's easy, it's my last name, Buckmaster. It's Bill Buckmaster with you. Coming up on 1220, two callers. Let's go to them. They both have questions, I assume, for Democratic mayoral candidate Randy Dorman. Sergio, you're first. Go ahead.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Randy.
Hi.
I have a question. I've been in Tucson just about as long as you have, and I've been born or raised in this town, seeing it grow. But the thing that I've seen a lot is that a lot of big avenues in the city are being, I don't know, forgotten, not reinvested. I mean, downtown is nice, but you have that Grant Avenue corridor, the Stone Avenue corridor, the First Avenue. These are very, you know, empty storefronts, neighborhoods that are struggling with poverty, with drugs, and these are things that I feel like we're missing. I mean, downtown is nice, but the rest of the city shouldn't be sacrificed for downtown's success.
Thank you, Sergio. Go ahead, Randy Dorman.
Sure. First, Sergio, thank you, because you are my very first radio question of the campaign.
Wow.
So I will remember this for a long time. And it's a great question. And one of the reasons that I've really wanted to be mayor of this city is because what I'd like to do is take the same energy and ideas that we brought to downtown. You know, downtown is now well on its way. We need to do those same things in the entire city. Each area, each ward, each neighborhood has opportunity that has not been tapped into. And so we need to go into each area and really see what the opportunity is. In some of the areas that you just mentioned specifically, there's a new federal program that I just went to a lecture on called Opportunity Zones, which may create some incentive opportunities that we didn't have before. So I think we need to be really thoughtful and creative about bringing those opportunities to all different parts of the city. And that is one of the main reasons I'm running.
Before we go to our next caller, let's hear Randy Dorman's top five things you want to accomplish. Give us the bottom line.
Okay. There's so many things that I'd like to do, but what I've really noticed is we have to focus on economic development. We can't stay a low-wage town in a town where so many people are facing poverty. And we need to support our local businesses to help them thrive. We need to create a strong business ecosystem so that entire industries can thrive. And there's also a lot of opportunity if we have better cooperation within the region. There's redundancies with the county that we could eliminate. And if we did more along the lines of annexation, we could bring more money into the city. So
all right.
Economic development.
Then?
Investing in our community. So elevating our quality of life by investing in public safety, parks, roads, transportation and educational support programs, and leveraging the arts.
Number three?
The environment. Climate change is going to have a profound effect on our city.
Number four?
Compassion first policies, just like I mentioned with people facing homelessness, but really compassion first policies for people facing all types of challenges and poverty.
And number five?
Number five, planning for the future. And that goes into a lot of the infrastructure ideas that we already spoke of, in addition, long-term planning, not just for the 4 or 8 years that I would be mayor, but longer term, like rail from our trade partners in Mexico all the way up through the Sun Corridor.
Now we go to the live line, 790-2040. Ingrid is with us. Ingrid, I understand you have a question and a comment. Let's begin with whichever is shortest.
Well, why are you so enamored of the modern streetcar? I would like to say that streetcar is causing a lot of trouble.
Really?
The tracks are a terrible tripping hazard. They mix up the traffic with pedestrians, and they confuse people. They don't know what to do first. You cannot steer out of the way of a potential accident with a streetcar. You can't. Your stopping distance is very lengthy. You cannot change the routes of those vehicles.
So,
whereas you can't. You can.
I understand you have a kind of a litany of problems with the
right.
streetcar.
I'm so sorry you don't like this modern streetcar.
Yes.
Well, the engineers that I spoke to a few years ago about the whole thing are not in love with it either.
Okay, so what would the question be for the mayoral candidate?
Why do you think that spending taxpayer money to put all these things in is so-called investing in the community?
There you go.
Okay. Well, first, I'm so sorry that you are having so many issues with this streetcar. I bike a lot to my meetings. I use my bike for transportation quite a bit. And I get nervous around the tracks. You have to really go at them from a perpendicular angle. As a driver, when I'm in my car, I haven't really experienced the same problems that you have, but I can see.
What could be done to maybe address some of these concerns?
You know, with the tracks, I think there are alternates as it gets expanded. You know, this was our first run at doing a project like that, but it's a very important means of transportation. And especially as we become more and more concerned with the climate, we have to improve our public transportation options. And the modern streetcar has been a very effective transportation tool, even within just a 4-mile stretch. So I think some of the engineering issues are probably easier to improve and navigate. But conceptually as a whole, I think it's still a very important transportation option.
All right. So we've got about 3 minutes left with Randy Dorman, 790-2040. If you would like to join in the conversation, we could probably work in one more question. One thing we haven't talked about is police and fire.
Yes. We have wonderful police and fire departments, but we don't have the money in the city to staff them the way that they really need to be staffed. And I think that is really the main issue. So that is one of the primary reasons that my biggest focus is on economic development. Right now, there is not enough money in the city of Tucson to meet the needs of the people of the city of Tucson. But there's possibly enough money in the region. And certainly, if we focus on growing the businesses that are here, like I think the businesses that are going to move Tucson forward already exist here. Sometimes we chase the next shiny thing, but I think those businesses are already here and they just need to be supported. It needs to be easier to do business here. We have to connect them to job training programs. We need to convert our economic development department into an economic empowerment department and really focus on how can we make the most of the businesses that are here and grow our economy so that we create new jobs and more money in the city so that we can then pay for the police and fire and the streets and all the things that we'd like.
You're talking about retention of the companies that we already have, right?
Yes, retention and growing those companies. And if we improve our quality of life here and create a thriving business environment, new businesses are going to want to move here organically.
All right, let's see if I can work one more caller in. And Bob is taking down the information because the caller knew we were very tight on time. So I will relay the information that Bob has put up on my screen. Caller, why not invest in the bus system, the current or newer, rather than the streetcar?
Sure. Well, we need to do both, actually. And there's a study going on right now in the transportation department about pairing an expanded streetcar line with rapid bus transit routes. And that's really the answer. It has to be both.
Now, what have you done social media-wise? How are you getting the word out about yourself?
Thank you for asking me that question.
We are friends on Facebook.
Yes, we are. You know, I post all the time.
I follow you on Facebook.
So yes. We do have a Randy Dorman for Mayor Facebook page. And we have a a preliminary website, which is randyformayor.com.
And it's R-A-N-D-I.
R-A-N-D-I. Yes. You know, there's never been a woman as mayor before. Randy with an I is usually how women spell it.
Right.
So
it would be highly unusual to have a woman named R-A-N-D-Y.
So I actually have a friend.
That it couldn't happen, but
yes, I have a friend who's a woman and she's R-A-N-D-Y.
That's why I said highly unusual. Okay. All right.
So randyformayor.com. Right now it's very basic, but within about 2 weeks we'll have all of our issues and vision up. But if you go to my website, what I would love, you can sign up and tell me what your vision for Tucson is. So there's a section right on the front. What's your vision for Tucson? Sign up to be on our emails and you can follow all the exciting things that we're doing. We want to bring change to Tucson and bring a vision of what's possible here, and we'd love for all of you to be part of it.
Thank you very much. Randy Dorman, our guest, R-A-N-D-I. Thanks. Thanks for being
Thanks,
on the
B-I-L-L.
Program. Yeah, B-I-L-L. All right. That's going to do it at the midway point, but there's still more. Coming up in the next half hour, Randy, did you realize that the Grand Canyon National Park celebrated this week its 100th anniversary?
Yes, I heard that. It certainly was created longer than that ago.
Oh, yeah.
But
so
the
you
park-
noticed, now if I had said, we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Grand Canyon without saying
I would have said that's
National
fake news,
Park.
Bill.
Yeah, there you go. All right, thanks, Randy. We'll be right back on Buckmaster at 12:30. Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. That bump music from Chicago, only the beginning. And think about it this way. Every show we do here is really a new beginning. Every day we're alive, it's a new beginning. All right, enough philosophy there, Bill. This portion of the Buckmaster Show presented by Zocalo and Green Things. Zocalo at Green Things, an extraordinary collection of Talavera pottery, antiques, fine art, handmade furniture, lighting, home accessories and gifts, plus 13 acres of amazing plants, trees, and annuals, and more at Green Things. Green Things, 3384 East River Road, open daily, and Zocalo Village, they have an open house this Saturday afternoon from 1 to 6, Zocalo Village. There are 7 separate shops there at Zocalo at Green Things. It's a really beautiful place if you've not been over there. This week, Arizona and the nation celebrated the centennial of the Grand Canyon as a United States National Park. The anniversary commemorates 100 years since President Woodrow Wilson established the Grand Canyon as a national park. The Grand Canyon is one of the 7 natural wonders of the world and the only one of those 7 in the United States. The first person credited with using the name Grand Canyon was John Wesley Powell. Powell led the first excursion down the canyon in 1869. With me on the live line from the Phoenix area today, John Ross. John is the author of a new book titled The Promise of the Grand Canyon, John Wesley Powell's Perilous Journey and His Vision for the American West. The book is published by Viking Press. John Ross is a former editor of American Heritage and an adventure writer with extensive whitewater experience. His previous books are Enduring Courage, Ace Pilot Eddie Rickenbacker, and The Dawn of the Age of Speed, and The War on, what is, I've missed, John, what is that one? The War on the...
War on the Run, Bill. Yeah, no.
There you go. I had missed... I had a letter out of place, so I was thinking, what the heck here? War on the Run, the epic story of Robert Rogers and the conquest of America's first frontier, which won the Fort Ticonderoga Award for contributions to American history. Okay, John, I think I've got it all properly the way I want it to be to give you the introduction you so richly deserve. How are you, sir?
Just fine, Bill. Just happy to be on the air with you.
You know, before we talk about the Grand Canyon, Rogers, wasn't there like Rogers Raiders, a British group in the French and Indian War?
You got it, Rogers Rangers.
Yeah,
and this guy, you know, I mean, this is before the Declaration of Independence and the War of the Revolution, when France and Britain were fighting for control over the continent, right? And this guy basically invented special operations as we know it, small unit warfare, and they still study him down at Fort Benning today. The modern Rangers who go off all over the world.
Wow, and he used some rather. Well, at the time, were unconventional tactics. You know, it was kind of, there was some slash and burn in there, as I recall.
Oh, you bet. You know, I mean, those guys went out and scalped. I mean, they basically adopted a lot of the, you know, the Indian, you know,
right.
tactics. Right. Or, you know, kind of psychological stuff, too. Mm. I mean, we forget about it. That's a big part of special ops is, you know, people show up and where they're not supposed to and,
yeah.
Yeah. With that of people.
I'm going to have to go on Amazon and see if that book is available. Is it a paperback or what?
Yeah, no, that's still in print and still doing well. No,
yeah.
That's a rip-roaring story. It's not for the weak-hearted, though. I mean, those times in the 1700s were pretty rough on everybody, you know?
Yeah. It was also pretty rough for John Wesley Powell and this expedition into what is now, into the Grand Canyon. Tell me a little bit about who in the world was John Wesley Powell?
So, right, you know, John Wesley Powell is a school teacher, kind of a self-taught geologist. And, you know, he goes into the Civil War, and as so many people did, he does really well. He's an artillery commander, but he loses his right forearm at the Battle of Shiloh. Confederate mini-ball strikes his wrist, and they have to amputate, and it's just not a pretty sight. But after that, he started thinking, as many Americans were, about the Great West, and exploring the West was largely unknown. And there was one last section of the continental United States that had not really been fully explored. People had not really been too much into it. It was the Grand Canyon area, a 100 by 300 mile section of the Colorado Plateau. It has Zion in it and Bryce, we know now, and the Grand Canyon. And he decided that it was unknown on the map where the Colorado River went, really what it was. I mean, the canyons were so deep, nobody could really get in there. So he decided to take, with his one arm, to take nine guys in four small rowboats down through the river, into the canyon. And I got to tell you, Bill, it's one of the most extraordinary American expedition stories. I mean, these guys didn't know what they were going to find. And it's just a harrowing tale because they hit, as we know, this white water that just can eat boats, and, you know, they're big rock walls, so you can't just pull over to the side all the time. You know, they ran out of food, and they had wrecks, and they were just beleaguered. It's an incredible story.
Even though the mission only lasted for 3 months, it started with nine men and four boats, as you say. There were six survivors who barely made it out alive, half naked, and only a few pounds of moldy flour between them. And they had started out with 10 months' supply of food.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny, Bill, they also carried with them some barrels of screws and axes and hammers and nails to build a cabin, because Powell was concerned that when the Colorado froze over, if you can imagine this, that they might have to build a cabin. That's how little they knew. Somebody's pointed out that they knew that Neil Armstrong going to the moon knew more about where he was going than Powell knew when they went down the river. And of course, the river was never going to freeze, but they didn't know that at all, right? So what happened to their food, right? Well, so you know, they would get wet. Then the rains came, and it would get wet, and it would get hot, and get wet, and their flour started getting this green mold on it. So they'd pull out their mosquito netting, and they'd put the flour on to get the mold off. And each time they did it, they would lose more than they would save. And then slowly it started dawning on them, because they also thought that they would hunt, but they didn't find any animals in the inner canyon.
You know, it's interesting that we're at the 100-year anniversary of the national park, and some might be asking, including myself, John Ross, why did it take so long for the Grand Canyon to become a national park?
That's a really good question, you know, because if you consider that Yellowstone became a park 47 years before that,
right?
And there were 15 other national parks that became national parks before the Grand Canyon. And you think today the Grand Canyon is the most iconic, as you were mentioning, it's the most iconic. And I believe that it had to do with a lot of things, but primarily because, and anybody who's been to the Grand Canyon, you know, you kind of come up to it and you can be 10 feet away and not see it. And then you step up and there it is, and it slaps you in the face. It's like you have just kind of, you're witnessing something that God is in the middle of creating that you're not supposed to see. I mean, it takes your breath away. It's not like a mountain that you can approach and see the sun on its flanks. The Grand Canyon is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And the vast majority, I mean, it's incredible, but the Spanish conquistadors came in 1540,
mm-hmm.
right? So so Grand Canyon was known before Niagara Falls was ever seen. So, and the conquistadors took one look over and said, well, no gold, no water, let's get out of here. And that was pretty much what everybody else said. It was like, this is a place that is going to kill you, and it's remote, it's alien, and all of that. And so, you know, so Powell, and it's an interesting guy, not just as an explorer, but he started to try to change people's minds and to show them that this wasn't a place of despair and desolation to be avoided at all costs. This was a place that was, like America, exceptional, right? I mean, there's nothing else like it. But it took a long time for that, even with Powell working very hard. He brought photographers. He brought painters. You got to remember the American West at that time. There were no novels. There were no Zane Grey novels or John Ford movies or Ansel Adams photographs. People didn't know, you know, what the West was about. I mean, there were no ways to kind of get a hold of it. And John Wesley Powell in his writing, and then the story of these, you know, these men going in these tiny boats. I mean, it's Homeric. It's like Ulysses, you know, these guys going up against.
It's a great story.
It's a great story. And so he began to slowly, you know, begin to change minds. And it still, even after that, took a great deal of time to make it a park.
All right, John, stay with us. We're going to come back to you after we take our break. We're talking with John Ross. He's the author of a highly acclaimed new book, The Promise of the Grand Canyon, very timely as we are this year with the 100th anniversary of the Grand Canyon National Park. On 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back with John Ross. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Support for Buckmaster comes from our friends in Green. We already did Green Things. Our support comes from Green Things and Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just a three-hour drive from Tucson. Visit Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org, for the complete listing of many great places to stay and several dozen recreation opportunities in a very pretty part of the southwestern United States and the southwestern corner of New Mexico specifically. It's Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Again, it's only about a three-hour drive from Tucson. We send a lot of our listeners over there, and everybody comes back, says the same thing. They had a great experience over there. John Ross is with us. Mr. Ross, his new book is The Promise of the Grand Canyon, and there's so many things that need to be said about this just really incredible explorer, John Wesley Powell. He was ahead of his time, wasn't he, John? And some of the predictions he made about water scarcities, he foresaw the 1930s Dust Bowl. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's interesting, and one of the things that drew me to him, Bill, was to really try to figure out how what happened with this kind of grizzled explorer who, you know, went through the Grand Canyon, is an extraordinary feat. But then he went on after that to become this visionary about American water development and land development. And believe it or not, he was really the first person to look at the American West right after the Civil War and to say, basically, look, there's not very much water out there. Now, that's pretty self-evident, but you've got to remember back then, everybody was saying the railroad barons, Manifest Destiny, the government wanted to hand out, as they had done in the Midwest very successfully, 160-acre parcels to each person that, you know, wanted to have some land and start. This is a very Jeffersonian idea, you know, the yeoman farmer. And Powell said, well, wait a minute, you know, we can't really do that. You know, water is limited. We need to keep the water in local controls, avoid monopolies. We need to be very careful. And he really broke with the tradition of the Young Republic, thinking about how to use the earth. And he was no environmentalist, but he really gave voice to environmental sustainability, the whole idea that we have to pay attention to what the land is telling us how to use it.
Isn't it interesting, John Ross, about people who make a huge achievement like Powell? They're then remembered that in history that was, you know, the Grand Canyon. But here was a man who had this second unheralded career as a scientist, a bureaucrat, and land management pioneer. It gets lost in history.
It really does. And there's a historian, Bernard DeVoto, in the 40s maybe, that, and he said, and it's always stuck with me, was that John Wesley Powell was more influential than most American presidents. And, you know, you think about that, it wasn't starting wars and all like that, but it was thinking about land development, it was thinking about science, it was all sorts of ways we think of ourselves as Americans.
Where did Powell come from, and how old did he, what was his age at the time of death?
So he was in his 60s and died in 1902, and he grew up in, his father was an evangelical Methodist minister who would get on horseback wherever they were, and it was in Ohio and Wisconsin and Illinois. They moved around, as families did a lot. And his father would take off for 2 or 3 months at a time to go spread the gospel. And so Powell grew up in the 1830s, right near the border of the Ohio River, which was the line between slave state of Kentucky and the free state of Ohio. And he was very affected by the Underground Railroad that developed about him. His father became an early abolitionist, and the kids in his school were very angry about that, and the people in this Ohio town about this abolitionism thing, and they stoned him. It's very biblical, you know. They didn't
He actually was stoned?
Stoned, yeah. They didn't beat him up with hands and feet.
Wow.
They stoned him, and you better believe everybody then knew about the Bible and that was biblical.
Wow.
And so that really, I argue in this my book, is that that really pushed him away and out of the mainstream, and it made him very, very an observant kind of guy, always thinking outside of the box. And he ended up befriending Indians and taking a great interest in even what the Mormons were doing with their land and all sorts of things. So he became this incredible person who could stand back and see things with new eyes.
We're speaking with writer John Ross, historian John Ross. The book, The Promise of the Grand Canyon, it's just really a thrilling, it's very timely, of course, but it's really thrilling account of a man who was an explorer, dared to lead the first successful expedition down the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon. And the man was an American visionary. He waged this bitterly contested campaign for environmental sustainability in the American West. If Powell were here today, would he be talking about climate change, John Ross?
You know, I can't read his mind, and he's been long dead, but I can basically tell you, with spending a lot of time reading and thinking about him, that he would be on the front lines today talking about climate change and how much was natural variation and how much was human variation. But he was a master at understanding the intersection between the effects of humans on the earth. So he would really be on the forefront, I believe, in the debate today.
Did he almost die during the expedition?
Oh, man, they almost all died.
Mm-hmm.
They nearly drowned. A fire broke out they pulled over to shore, and the cook lit up a fire for the coffee, and an ember got away when the gust came, and there was a lot of driftwood, you know, been there forever,
mm-hmm.
and there was a conflagration, and it burned their clothes. One guy had his eyebrows singed off.
Wow.
Oh, I mean, and then, you know, they lost a boat, it went into a rapid, hit a rock, and the three guys just barely made it out. They lost everything they owned, except for the long underwear they were in. And, you know, just one thing after another, you know, these guys were just put through the ringer to really make this kind of this idea of courage. And I think we're so soft now, but you think about these guys going off into the unknown and what that was like. And what kind of courage that took. I mean, it's extraordinary.
You know, the first time you see the Grand Canyon, I don't know about you, John, but it's an impression that never leaves you. When was the first time you saw the Grand Canyon?
Well, I was, I think, 18, and
mm-hmm.
I had just finished hiking the Appalachian Trail with my Swedish girlfriend, and we hitchhiked out west, and I felt like it was a magnet pulling me there. You know, I just had to come and see that. And we hitchhiked in on a tour bus of Australian Girl Scouts, pulled in there, and then got in there and spent a week down there. And it's funny, Bill, I've gone back to this place, this landscape, this extraordinary feature, all my life at different intersections, you know, brought my kids when they were younger. I just went down with my adult children and my wife down the river, you know, and each time I come back at different times in my life, at different chapters, it has something different to offer me. I mean, I just don't think that there are so few places that can happen. And what is it about this place? Well, it's extraordinary.
All right. The Promise of the Grand Canyon, the name of the book. John Ross is the author, and John will be at the Tucson Festival of Books. He'll be involved with two panels Sunday morning, 10 to 11, the National Parks Experience. That's going to be interesting. The Canyon Perspectives, celebrating 100 years of the Grand Canyon. That's Sunday morning. Then Sunday afternoon at 2:30, he'll be involved with another panel, the Grand Canyon and American Culture. For more information, go to the Tucson Festival of Books to their extensive schedule. I'll be involved as well Saturday morning at 10, interviewing Nina Burley, who's written a book about Donald Trump and the women in his life. That should be an interesting session. All right, John, thank you very much. Good luck when you're here in Tucson at the Festival of Books. Appreciate it very much.
Hey, Bill, my pleasure.
Thanks a lot. John Ross, the author of The Promise of the Grand Canyon. Steve Rivera is in the house. Steve hosting the very popular program, Eye on the Ball. That's going to do it today. I'm Bill Buckmaster. On behalf of Bob Dio, we hope you have a great afternoon and evening.